So then we continue with IS 28. Kazu, for his last appearance in this court. Let it be a stellar performance.
Right.
Pressure, pressure.
So good morning, everybody. The ISB published the exposure draft in November 2012 about the equity method, share was and net asset changes. And in October this year, the ISB discussed the feedback from respondents. And at that meeting, the ISB directed the staff to do more analysis about whether an investor should recognize other net asset changes in either profit or loss or OCI. And in particular, the ISB requested more analysis on the share-based payment transactions. In this paper, we present three views. View one, investors' profit or loss. View two, investors' OCI, with the cumulative amount of OCI being reclassified to profit or loss when the investor discontinues the use of the equity method. And view three is IFRIC's original proposal, which is the effect of the other net asset changes will be recognizing profit or loss if the ownership interest in the investment is reduced, or at cost if the ownership interest in the investment increases. And later of this paper, we present a modified view three, which is a combination of the IFRIC's proposal, Interpretations Committee's proposal, and the OCI approach. So in effect, we present four views in this paper. we prepared some examples, including two examples about share-based payment expenses, transactions, and we applied each view to each example in this paper. In particular, we'd like to highlight that the share-based payment transaction for employee services does not affect the associate's net assets at the grant date for the vesting period. And if you look at the definition of the equity method, it's about the accounting for the changes in the net assets of the associates. So by definition, it's not clear if the investor should account for the change of the associate net assets caused by the share-based payment transactions. But we think that the debit side of the associate share-based payment entry would represent relevant information because that represents investors' share of the investees' expense about the share-based payment transactions. And for the credit side, also provide relevant information in our view, because the investor, because that represents the potential dilution for the investor shareholders. So that is it is a prerequisite of this paper that the investor should account for both debit and credit side of the associate share-based payment transactions. And based on our analysis, we recommend view two, which is OCI approach. This is because for the debit side, under view two, the investor recognizes share of the expense of the share-based payment transactions. And for the credit side, the impact of the transaction is deferred, temporarily deferred in OCI until the options are exercised, which we think addresses the problem over the timing about the share-based payment transactions. So the question to the ISB is, do you agree with the staff recommendation?
I would like to congratulate the very good paper and also very good example, which we can find out what exactly the problem of this issue is. However, I would say I disagree with staff's recommendation. I still think the profit or loss view one is the best choice for us to take. The reason is this is the simplest method, and this is very straightforward and verifiable method. And the very important point of equity accounting is we have to keep equation between the carrying amount of investment and the proportion of the equity in the associate. This equation must be kept all the time. So view one always keep that equation. And the view three do not do that. So therefore, we reject the view three. The question is whether view two or view one, which is better? So suppose you have a company like Apple 30 years ago, and let's call it, you know, pineapple, whatever. And you have 45% of share of the pineapple 30 years ago. And that company keep issuing additional share to others in order to realize the value of their corporate. And then eventually, because of additional issue, your shares keep declining 40% to 20%. Then, if you go down the your stuffed view, OCI, it always kept in the OCI, not in the profit or loss. But you are saying that it should be recycled when you cease the equity accounting. Then, now you have 20% of pineapple. Then it goes down to the 90% at the last additional share. Then all of a sudden, you have to recycle that difference. And then you have to recognize a huge profit at the, you know, now. So you are recognizing 30 years accumulated value realization at the day of end of the equity method. So I don't think it's the proper timing of recognizing profit or loss. Profit or loss must be recognized at the timing when they issued additional share, because if the associate issued additional share, the investor is losing some proportion of the right on the associates. So therefore, as long as issuing the associates additional share, it is kind of, you know, actual fact happening on the day of additional issue. And this is same in the even in the case of share option. Actually, I said the your example is very good, is because view example three is excellent, because you did not go to the share based payment, but you just described issued warrants and bought furniture or something. So then that depicts the timing difference between recognizing expense and recognizing issuing of warrants. So let's forget about furniture. Suppose if you issue the warrant and get the cash at the associates. So associate Pineapple issued just warrant and get a huge amount of cash in the associates. So then why could they get that huge cash over there? And what is the interaction between the associates and investors? Actually, if you put yourself into the shoes on the investor, you are losing very important right on the apple, not apple, pineapple. So if you kept it for another 30 years, you could earn a fortune, but you gave away some important rights on pineapple. So then, at that point, the in a sense value was realized at the associates level. So that must be reflected on the book of the investor. Actually, if you keep the equation between investor's book and associate's proportion of the equity, then if you keep the equation, then you would recognize the value realized in the associates. So then that should go to either OCI or profit or loss. But I don't think OCI is right, because what happened was at the point of issuing warrants. So therefore, that to recognize profit or loss, the right timing of recognizing profit or loss is at the timing of issuing warrants. So therefore, I think by going view one, it can address the issue of share-based payment. So I think we should go to view one.
Patricia.
I don't support the staff recommendation primarily because of its proposal on how to account for share-based payments. It's the general principle in the staff recommendation is that the net asset changes of the associate that don't go through P&L go to equity, and they're not recycled until the equity method is no longer used. But in the case of share-based payments, they're recycling when the option is exercised. And in my view, there's absolutely no difference in selling a share to someone as they exercise an option and selling it to them directly. So I don't see why you would recycle a gain or a loss on exercise of an option, but you wouldn't recycle or recognize in profit and loss a gain or loss on just issuing a share directly. So I don't think there's a consistency in the logic of the staff recommendation. I think share-based payments are the biggest problem we face in this issue. However, I think this issue has gotten more important since last month's decision to incorporate the equity method again into the separate financial statements to permit companies that are preparing separate financial statements to use the equity method. And so now if we go, for instance, tax profit and loss route, when a parent company prepares its separate financial statements, it will in effect be recognizing gains or losses on transactions with shareholders in their capacity as shareholders. If we believe in the entity theory in separate financial statements, I don't know whether we do or not. We've never had a discussion about what separate financial statements are. And I'm not sure that our constituents are going to be happy in recognizing these gains and losses in profit and loss in their separate financial statements. And I'm also very concerned about how share-based payment transactions would end up being treated in the separate financial statements. Would it end up that in some situations the parent would have significantly reduced compensation costs because its majority but not wholly owned subsidiaries are using its own shares to compensate employees? So for all of those reasons, I really think we need to reconsider again the recommendation in the ED, because I think for as a short-term fix, it produces the least unintended consequences for these transactions. Last month, I think we had 8 board members support the ED. No other proposal on the table last month gained as much support. And so I would urge people to rethink whether or not they're willing to accept in the short term, as a short term solution, the ED proposal.
That's view 3.
No, it's not view 3. It's not even in this paper.
It's 4.
It says.
Not really.
No, I'm joking, view 4. Yeah. Which is
no, there is a view 4 in the paper.
Yeah, there is a view 3, yeah. Vote 5, but the exposure draft view is not here in this paper.
It's not in this paper.
Yeah.
Because we rejected it last month.
We didn't reject it. 8 or 15 voted for the ED, so we decided that wasn't enough votes. So.
Steve?
I don't agree with any of the views that are in the paper. I don't agree with, I do agree with TAC that we shouldn't use OCI. That's definitely the worst of the options, but I don't agree with his analysis of the situation. I agree with Patricia that share-based payments are the biggest problem. The accounting that's being proposed effectively reverses IFRS 2 in the investor's financial statements in respect of its investment in the associate. TAC used the example of issuing warrants for cash, and whilst that's slightly different from the ones in here, it is a kind of a purer, simpler example to use. And I get to a very different answer when analyzing that than TAC does. So if an associate issues warrants for cash and those warrants are equity settled, therefore they're classified as equity, in the associate's financial statements, you increase cash and you increase equity. The increase to equity, of course, is a separate component, it's the warrants. And that's very clear, and the shareholders are not better off. If you issue warrants at fair value, fine, you've got cash, but you've also got this extra claim on the business from the warrant holder. So nobody's any better off, the company's raised some finance, that's all that's happened. But then you go to the investor's financial statements that's applying the equity accounting. The investor's percentage holding of the common stock hasn't changed. So they hold 30% before, they still hold 30% after, in spite of the fact that you've got these warrants outstanding. But the cash balance of the associate's gone up. So net assets have gone up. And what you do then, correct me if I'm wrong in my analysis, what you do is instead of applying your 30% shareholding to the net assets before this transaction, you apply it to the 30% to the net assets after, and you get an increase in your share of net assets. And under the proposal, the staff recommendation, that would go to OCI. Under tax view, it would go to profit and loss. And I don't see how that's a gain. I don't see how the investing company is any better off as a result of the associate issuing warrants for cash. And that flows through into the share-based payment transactions. It flows into the issue of warrants to buy plant, which is one of the other examples. And I just don't see how it reflects the economics to show that either in P&L or in OCI, which is why I felt if you're going to have one solution for all these different transactions, the only one that vaguely works is to equity. I actually think the problem is being tackled by lumping different things together and trying to find one solution. What we've got is transactions in common stock at the associate level, which produce deemed acquisitions and deemed disposals. And then we've got transactions in other types of equity, warrant, share-based payments, convertibles, preference shares. These other transactions produce other effects, and we're trying to lump it all together and produce one method of accounting. Whereas ordinarily, we deal with these things differently. We have a different standard that deals with acquisitions than deals with share-based payments, and quite rightly, because they have different economic effects. So I don't support lumping it all together into one, and I certainly don't support view A or view B, because I don't think the example I produced produces a gain. I think that's crazy. I don't support ignoring share-based payments, which is the view 3, I think, because share-based payments are key transactions. They're probably the most common equity-type transaction that the associate is going to enter into. So I think we need to do more thinking on this.
Thank you. Yes, this is a really difficult issue, but the paper is a very interesting and well organized and well analyzed all issues related. Basically, my preference is maybe different from the Stevens and Patricia's. Maybe I prefer view one. Actually, there's no best solution among these four, maybe including our exposure draft proposal. Based on the example four, the share-based payments, you showed all kinds of issues here. But it seems to me the problem of we are facing is artificial accounting issue rather than economics. So there are maybe some deficiencies of equity accounting, as Patricia pointed out earlier. So the problem is the equity accounting, not that they are the real, subsidiary or associate investor. They don't have any problems. So they just don't want some good information that better depicts the economics of this transaction. It seems to me there are example one and example three and four are basically, they have the common economics of the all things are, looks to me like a deemed disposition of their some maybe new shares or old shares, it doesn't matter, or share options. At now or 5 years later, they are financing some money, subsidiary or associate, they are financing some money. By obtaining this cash, they can keep the cash in for 5 years. That's example one. Example three, they bought a PP&E and getting a more return expected. Example four, they are paying salaries by this cash to get a more return. So this is a kind of typical example. If we respect the proposal or recommendation of interpretations committee, if they interpret their example one as a deemed disposition, then I think these are all the cases of example one, three, four are the same. We have to the same economics. We have to show the same accounting treatment. But another thing is nobody knows what the equity accounting really means. But it seems to me it's a kind of its objective is a kind of a close approximation of fair value P&L, I guess, POL. In that case, maybe we do better show that's why I'm suggesting in a straightforward, simple, and we might show there some kind of a close number to fair value POL. So there, basically there's no best solution until we clarify what equity accounting and is. So until that time, I guess we need a kind of some compromise solution to markets. So it seems to me for that purpose, I guess, I respect the interpretation committee and the extension of that recommendation of interpretation committee to share-based payments too. So that's why if we extend that proposal of the interpretation committee, then we can get to the point of the view one. That's what I'm going to say.
Martin?
I think we have to stick with our ED proposal because I think these examples have really demonstrated that there is no best solution, and especially there is no best solution to put that in profit or loss or OCI, because it has really made clear that, as Steve said, the most relevant transaction in this is share-based payment, and I really cannot see is any kind of performance of that entity. So it should not be in profit and loss, it should not be in OCI, because that is at least some element of performance, and I don't see any performance then from the entity which then reported that. So I really think we have to, if we want to solve that again and want to have one solution for everything, we should stick to our ED. And I think from that paper I have not seen any new information which should change my decision when we said, okay, we should maybe have an easy solution, and we have not an optimal solution, but the easy solution is then to put all this kind of changes in equity, and that's it.
Mary?
I don't support the staff's recommendation. Instead, I pick view one as the least bad option. I think there are problems with each of the alternatives, one, two, and three, as well as with the ED. And MON is more a process of elimination rather than trying to get the best possible accounting for these transactions. I eliminate view two because I think all our work in the conceptual framework is showing us the difficulty of defaulting to OCI when we, you know, when we don't have a better place to put something, and I think this creates another group of problems by using that answer. I think the ED and, you know, the logic in the ED in terms of recognizing something directly in equity was we're just going back to where we were before, but in the period when we changed, you know, from when we had it before and now, we've changed other things that I think create much greater conceptual challenges to recognizing something directly in equity. I'm thinking specifically of the amendments that we made in 2009-2010 to the statement of comprehensive income and saying that things recognized in have to either be P&L or OCI if they're not transactions with shareholders. It's that logic that leads me back to one, and then when I test one against the transactions, I'm actually okay with the outcomes that are illustrated in the examples in the paper. When an associate of an investor, and I'm not saying any entity to which the equity method is applied, I'm saying when an associate of the investor issues shares, that's a transaction outside of the entity because an associate is not part of the group. So I'm okay with the gain on equity transaction because to me the investor is dribbling away some of its stake in the company. I agree with Pat McConnell that there will be a concern if we do finalize the exposure draft, I think it is, on the alternative to use equity method in the separate financial statements of a parent in accounting for its subsidiary. And my problem with option one, alternative one in that case, will be group share-based payments where it's the parent issuing the shares. Because I think then we could get into a situation of parent issues shares or share-based payment to employees of sub, and you might end up, I think I'd like the staff to think about this, and Kaz is lucky it's not going to be him. You might end up in a situation where attributing that transaction to the sub and then applying the equity method, in essence, ends up with the parent recognizing under option one P&L gains on issuance of its own shares. I think we can deal with that if we decide to finalize the ED on separate financial equity method and separate financial statements by recognizing the potential conflict between that and the prohibition on gains and losses on transactions in your own shares and just deal with that issue.
You just confused me between sub and associate. So
I was saying I'm okay with option one when it's the parent investment in associate. I see the problem, assuming we finalize the ED that we have out, it's an ED outstanding, parent's ability to use the equity method in its separate financial statements. And that's when you're applying the equity method and you have this group share-based payment transaction.
The group share-based is only with the subsidiary.
Right, but in the separate financial statements, if you're applying the equity method, I think
even in that case, you wouldn't issue the group share-based payment to the associate.
I think then if you're issuing the group share-based payment to a subsidiary, that you are applying the equity method in the separate financial.
That's a different story.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think that any concern I have with option one.
So that's not the problem of this issue. This is the issue of using equity accounting for the separate.
I agree, and I don't want to blow up that ED.
I see.
But I think there's a conflict, the same way we identified another conflict that we answered in that ED between equity method and other principles that we addressed in that ED. So having thought about it and having thought about Pat's concern that some of the problems that come out of using the equity method are magnified when you have share-based payments in the financial statements of subs, I think we can deal with it. And so that leaves me back in saying alternative one is the least bad answer for answering that. So it's not enthusiastic endorsement of option one, but I think having considered all the others, including the ED, I think that's the lesser of three or four evils.
Can I ask a question? Yes. I don't understand, Mary, when you say we can deal with it.
I think when we look at the exposure draft and our re-deliberations on the equity method in separate financial statements, if I'm working through my logic right, and I need a quiet room and a lot of debits and credits to do this, I think we will come to a conflict between the mechanics of the equity method and the principle in IAS 32 that you shouldn't have P&L gains on transactions in your own shares. And therefore, we can add, you know, we could say, because there's this conflict, here's the one that overrides. But that's going on to that idea. That's why I'm saying I think I can separate it from this issue.
But that only deals.
Your quiet room is highly recommended. But tell me something: is it the parent contributing the shares, or is it a group company contributing the shares?
Some group share-based payments are the parent issuing options or shares of the parent, because that's the
listed. I don't think that's an issue for me. I don't think that's an issue, but there could be an issue if a sister company issues, then there could be an issue.
Maybe that as well, but I was thinking of the parent issuing those to employees of the sub that are accounted for using the equity method in the separates. It's getting on to the other ED, but I think we have to think about it because of the interaction. But I think I can get okay with this.
But it doesn't deal with the circumstance where the associate itself issues its own shares.
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with P&L gain on that, yes.
But what if it's a subsidiary issuing its own shares?
I'm okay with that too, because the parent is losing a piece of its ownership.
But it gets a gain.
It's a gain. It negates the expense.
Depends on the amount.
It's bound to be a gain. It has to be a gain.
It has to be a gain, and it negates the IFRS 2.
Complex fact pattern. So we should try to keep some very simple basic concept to try to deal with it. A simple concept to me is that under the equity method, any relution or dilution of the investor in the associate is something that should be reflected in comprehensive income. Because there is no cost. There is no transaction undertaken by the investor. There is no use of resources of the investor. So there is no cost. Again, this increase or decrease of the value, so-called value, of the investment, the value calculated through the equity method. So we have to have an element in comprehensive income. Now, whether it is P&L or OCI is the next question. Pending the work that we are doing on conceptual framework on the role of OCI, I don't know at this stage. I don't know whether OCI is a better solution. I agree that P&L is simpler than OCI, but if we find out that OCI has a role to play here, why not? But at this stage, I don't know. But I know that this gain, that which goes through P&L or OCI, is only temporary. It's at the time you issue the option. But when the option is exercised, the gain disappears because you are diluted at the moment. So whether we should have first a gain, then reverse a gain at the exercise of the options.
You might have a gain on the exercise of the option too. It depends on
the price. And you might have a further gain or a loss. Yeah. Depends on the conditions. If they are issued at fair value, I have no gain or loss. But it might be different.
But it's by comparison to what your investment.
Absolutely. And I have a mechanical gain or loss if the fair value is above my share of the net assets. So it's very complex. And those elements are, I think, inherent to the equity accounting. Any transaction that is done by the associate on a basis which is different from the share of net assets creates mechanically some elements in accounting that we are forced to call a gain or a loss. And whether it's an economic gain or loss, no, it's neither. It's not. It's just the mechanics of the equity accounting. So on that basis, I think it's a bit too difficult to conclude at this stage on this topic. I will not rush a conclusion. And I think we say simple
short-term solution, unperfect, is a view one because it is a simplest one, but we are not happy with it. Or we keep it open and we don't answer the question now.
Yeah, and we don't answer until we finalize conceptual framework, is that your idea?
Until we know more about the role of OCI.
So it would be...
I wouldn't count on the discussion paper or the final conceptual framework to be clear.
Yeah, okay, but the staff proposal to use OCI here does assume that we have a preference for OCI for this kind of transactions over P&L, and I don't know on what basis we can make this assumption today.
Peter? I wanted to comment on two things related to the work we've done on the conceptual framework. The first is about OCI, and it seems to me that all our existing uses of OCI are driven by remeasurements. And we don't yet have any OCI that's driven directly by transactions. And I think at least some of what we're talking about here is more transaction-driven than directly valuation-driven.
No, there is no transaction by the reporting entity. It is passive. It is passive and suffers or benefits from a windfall profit or loss, because there is a transaction done by the associates, not the investor, which has an effect. So it's a remeasurement. It's a remeasurement more than a transaction.
Possibly. So there might be room for different views on that point. But I think that's a point to consider. Mm-hmm. My second point is a concern I had about the share-based payment case. And the concern a lot of people seem to have is that the equity accounting might negate the share-based payments. And I'm not convinced that's the case. Now, I know we don't know exactly what equity accounting is, but it's related to changes in your share of the net assets. And I think it's easiest to illustrate it with the warrant example that Tak and Steve used. And I was thinking about how you would analyze that if you think about it in the light of the work we've done on equities and liability in the conceptual framework. So we explored two approaches there. The first approach is the narrow equity approach, which says everything that's not ordinary shares is a liability. And so if you think about what the associates' net assets would look like after that transaction, it's received cash and it's taken on a liability for the same amount. And so there's been no change in net assets at that stage from that transaction. The other approach we looked at was the strict obligation approach, which says, yes, it will be classified as equity, but it's clearly a separate class of equity. And on day one, the chances are we'd probably measure that at the fair value. So again, although the total equity has increased by the amount of the cash, the part that's attributable to the ordinary shareholders is unchanged, and the investor's share of that share of the net equity would also be unchanged.
Is that true?
Well,
because
that's
my understanding of equity accounting is that you take your percentage share in the net assets, not your percentage share in the net assets attributable to your class of equity.
Well, whatever equity accounting is, that seems to me to be quite a strange calculation, really. I mean, I think that's
the problem with equity accounting.
But I think that works fine if you've got one class of equity. But as soon as you've got more than one class of equity...
Yeah, that's why we need to have a project on equity accounting, because it doesn't work. am I right? I mean, this seems to be a fundamental question.
It is. I think it's your share of net assets of the equity metric.
Full stop.
You are right.
Your share of net assets of the equity method accounting. So that I think we need to be very, very clear about that. It's not share of net assets, it's your share of net assets.
But what would that calculation...
Your class of equity, basically.
But if we change what net assets are, okay.
So you're agreeing with Peter?
That's an issue.
No, I think I'm agreeing with Peter, I'm sorry. I'm agreeing with Peter, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I'm not sure what a calculation that just says a percentage of the total net assets when you've got different types of claims on the net assets. I'm not sure what that would tell you.
The problem with, I think the bridging the gap between those two, though, is that things like share-based payments are not generally allocated to a class of shareholders. So if you're talking preference shares or A shares and B shares, I'd agree absolutely. It's my share of the A shares. But if I'm talking about things that don't belong to a particular class of shareholding, then those get allocated to the residual class. So if I'm holding the ordinary shares and the residual, and there are things like share-based payments, I will get my share of those share-based payments. And I think that's where the problem comes in. So I think Peter's right if you were able to say that, for example, share-based payments or warrants are attributed to a separate class of shares. But I don't think that's practice.
But I think that's a slightly different
point.
So
shares don't exist.
But I think if you go back to the warrants for cash example, in that case, the asset you've received is cash. The cash sits there. You do whatever you do with the cash. You buy some other assets, whatever you're going to do. In the share-based payment example, the asset you're receiving is employee services. As it happens, you expense that immediately. You consume it immediately. And you presumably generate some benefits with those services. But the thing you've received is cash. But you still have two classes of equity in that case, or if we'd gone with the narrow equity approach, you'd have an extra liability that's in there. So it seems to me on day one, you can't really have any gain from your share of the equity. How you measure it subsequently, that's another question and a more complicated question.
But that's inconsistent with example four.
Well, I think example four and example three are assuming it's a single percentage of all the net assets. It's not distinguishing the different things on the total net assets.
But I agree with Daryl.
It's common equity. I agree with Daryl too. That's the way I always thought it worked. The definition. As long as it's common net equity, right? If they issued preferred stock, it would be a different story.
That's why the definition of net assets is critical here.
And part of this gain is actually coming from the fact that investment in the associate is an accumulation of historical cost amounts. We've just had cash coming in, and of course that's at fair value, of course. So therefore, this dilution gain is arising from the fact that we have a share of the cash that's coming in.
No, yep. That's not an explanation.
It is part of it's the dilution gain.
No.
Gary?
I think the only thing I'm absolutely certain of here is I don't support staff's recommendation. It, for a couple of reasons. One is I don't think OCI is a place to put a transaction, that you can't think of a better place to put it in. But also, the proposal about when you cease using the equity method, then you sort of recycle it back in. One extra share in the wrong period, could flip you from 20.0 to 19.9, assuming that's deemed the line. And I know in practice, if you're that close and you've got a multiple type of, two-class stock, differential voting rights and dividend rights, the 20% test is not always nice and neat and clean, as we'd like to think it is. I think most of the time it is, but not all the time. Reflecting on what Stephen had said, about sometimes you're trying to account for too many dissimilar things. So you look at this thing. You've got capital markets type transactions where you're buying or selling shares. Then you've got a compensation program for share-based payments. Leave it at stock options or stock grants or so on. So, which brings me to your alternative 3A, which sort of dropped in here and then you didn't develop it because it's complicated. You said it's complex, and I agree it's more complex, but how much more complex do you think it is, guys? I mean, that seemed to be the primary reason why it was rejected as additional complexity. But again, if you've got capital markets and you've got compensation programs, we have accounting, for both, throughout our standards. So how much more complexity would this really add? Actually, if I had a vote for mine, I'd probably pick 3A, but I suspect I might be a minority on that, but I'd like to hear your views on the complexity.
Sorry, you're saying view 3 excludes
the modified 3A. Again, you got capital markets and you got compensation programs. You have accounting for both elsewhere. How much extra complexity does that give if you're the investor?
In my experience in practice, one company could have many associates. One associate could have many transactions, even one quarter. If it's a subsidiary, it's relatively easy to get all the financial information necessary to close accounts. But if it's associate, it's just difficult to get the information right. And if the associate makes lots of transactions, issuing shares, buying back shares, issuing share-based payment options, is it really doable to segregate, distinguish accounting based on those transactions? I don't think so. That's why.
Is it because the volume of associates would fall in one associate?
I mean, if you think the equity accounting is a variation of financial assets, you may be right, but in my mind, it's something in the middle.
Because there's complexity in accounting theory, and there's complexity in processability. And I think you answered more on a processability. Because I was thinking perhaps more on accounting theory, with assuming you get the information. And if it's an equity affiliate, you presume have an ability to get certain information from them, or you wouldn't have significant influence.
Right, right. But I would like to highlight this is a narrow scope amendment to fix diversity criteria.
And, good job.
The objective of a narrow scope amendment to provide a quick fix to address diversity in practice.
Could, just a dumb question, could you explain to me the difference between three modified and the ED proposal?
ED's proposal said the investor should recognize in equity for all kinds of transactions, including share-based payment transactions. The modified view three is a combination of the interpretations committee approach and the OCI approach. So if in case of an indeemed acquisition, the investor should recognize the effect at cost. And in case of indeemed disposal, the investor should recognize the effect in profit or loss. And for other, call option transactions, OCI should be used. That is a modified view three.
Thank you.
And what Gary said, man, I think it is really important that it is not too complex, because you have only, as a reporting entity in this kind of situation, you have only significant influence, and you maybe get a reporting package, and from these entities which should be lean and should not really have divided in other transactions and 10 or 12 or whatever kind of different transactions, and then you have to decide accounting. I think for me, at equity accounting is also a kind of a not so complex including in the financial statements for entities which you don't have control, and therefore it should be simple and should be not complex. And if you then differentiate a bunch of really different transactions, I think the whole idea of equity accounting will go away, because it should not be a fully consolidation where you maybe have all this kind of difference. And equity is a kind of simple including in financial statements, and it should not then have different things, because maybe you don't have any chance to get this information, because you're not controlling, you have only this significant influence.
But I think if you go down the path of view three, then you cannot keep the equation between the book value of the investors and the proportion of share of the associates. If we couldn't keep it, then it wouldn't be verifiable. And if it accumulates, it will mess up the book of the investors, and
that's
it wouldn't be auditable.
And yeah. If your equation is easy.
I don't think so.
Amaru?
Okay. Thanks, Hans. We are dealing again with what we call, it's a narrow scope, but in a 10-page paper, we have six alternatives right now. So we have the four that staff brought, and we have the ED that's not here, and we have the more thinking as suggested by Steven. So, and this started back in 2012, and this was brought to the interpretation committee. We didn't agree, we exposed it. Outsiders didn't agree for exposure draft. So according to you, what you said in paragraph three, considerable number of respondents disagreed with the ISB proposal. I acknowledge, however, they didn't propose anything better. So I think, are we willing to resolve this? We have two alternatives in my view. We either go for a short term, as Patricia stated, that's inception. We either go for a short term, for an alternative that we do understand is the best one. For a short term alternative, for me, is the exposure draft. Why? Although we had reactions to our exposure draft, we had no other alternative for us. We had among these six alternatives, I will limit to five, we had the simpler of all of them is the P&L, because P&L, we all understand what P&L is, we acknowledge the what happens during these 5 years according to your examples. But we have an important issue that Stephen is pointed out, is when we had an increase in net asset that is a result of other claims to the entity. So should this go straight to profit and loss during this 5 year period for your example, up to the point where the option is exercised or not? Well, we can accept that when we can disclose that, and at the end of the day we can have the effect exposed to that. So consider all this. If I'm willing to resolve this, I will keep the exposure draft.
Good job.
Because, as Martin said, there is nothing new here that would drive me to explore another alternative. Only if we decide that we do need more thinking, as Steve said, I would say, but we decided not to drop the project before, I would say the only more thinking that I see here is a project on equity accounting. And I only see this as a long-term alternative. So I believe, in the point I am, the exposure draft is the best alternative for us to go further.
Why do you not like view one?
Well, I as I said, P&L, I would accept that with no problem. But we've debated that before, and there is more noise in P&L, and some of us didn't accept as easy the increase in net asset as a result of these other transactions that are not, I would say, normal, such as warrants and options, share options.
PK.
As Kaju and I are leaving the board, and somebody who have espoused something for the past 1 year, 7 months or 8 months now on this issue, I think Amaro said it well, and I supplement what Patricia said and to some extent what Steve said. We can tinker it, we can make it. I think the true way to do this is to break this into two different buckets. There are transactions like the warrants issue where the associate issues a non-convertible bonds or irredeemable preference shares, you can get to a different answers. But I really think, Kaju, you said it in a polite way, in a little bit frustrated, but a little bit polite way, you said this is a narrow scope amendment. And I think we have been very, very clear in our objectives from the day one, not today, day one, that's 1 year, 8 months ago, is that we are restoring 2007, pre-2007, and we do not think the change was made deliberately in 2007, if I remember correctly. It happened, it got swept by something else, but not somebody said, let's remove this from the equity accounting because we don't like it. So we got to honor the previous board's decision that it was a collateral damage, I would use the word. So we need to restore that. I think Amaro said it well. If we start tinkering it, we're going to sit here for, not me, but this board, or the next board is going to sit for 10 years to decide this. This goes to the root of the issue. Now that the boards have talked about it, now that the IFRIC has talked about it for this long, if we leave this project here, people think it's a free-for-all. They can do anything they want. And we are adding to the complexity that Patricia brought up, which is that if you allow, and I think we should allow, and my recommendation to the board is that we should allow the separate financial statements equity method, and this should not start bleeding into that. Well, we couldn't solve it, so let's not add to the problem. I think there are two separate problems, and I really think, I don't think it is my greatest answer, and it has been the case day one, and I think P&L will give an incorrect answer, the noise, and it does not reflect the performance of the entity for that period. The equity method is clear that you do it when you sell it, and they have not sold anything, and they do all these deemed acquisitions, what if accounting comes into picture. So my recommendation is that, And we like Patricia said, we got 8 votes last time. We should vote and see whether that has any legs to it. If not, I think this project will go nicely into to be discussed later on. So I think we should at least recheck whether there's any change of heart. I think Steve is one of them, so we might get to 9 if everybody sticks to their votes. So I really think we should think about it. And we acknowledge, and the board should say it very clearly in the basis of conclusion, that it is not the greatest of the solutions, but this will plug it, and we are restoring 2007.
Hmm. Wait, go.
I now support Steve's idea, not so quickly, particularly before Pickering. The reason is very simple. We expose equity achievement, and it seems the issue's solved, but actually not solved. And assume we finalize on that basis, then when we finalize our ED on conceptual framework, we'll add another item on it. That is, several months ago we decided treat the sexual transaction into equity, which, as Philippe said, should be part of comprehensive income. The reason why we not recognize either as a profit loss or OCI is because we're not certain about OCI. Then we have to bring back to the conceptual framework DP or ED, and we got new items we're not sure. So I don't think it will become better. Let me finish. Then we not doing so. As Philippe said, you know, we have to make it clear whether it is comprehensive income or not, or part of comprehensive income or not. And if is, then I feel hard to accept to put something into equity. It's because we are not certain. And secondly, you know, between OCI and profit loss, and I try to figure out which will be much more useful for users. This is quite important, you know. And I open our DP on conceptual framework. I always like in one principles we agree with each other, that is, recognize an item OCI if that enhances the relevance of profit loss, you know. And the reason from beginning why the staff proposed either into OCI or into equity is because they don't feel, our consultants don't feel it is reflecting the performance, as Martin said. It's not reflecting the performance. So even though we feel hard to solve issues on how to define OCI profit loss, but at least in everybody's mind, you know, performance, the profit loss or OCI reflect performance. Always this is something, you know, you're bothering us. And all of our debate on the OCI category for the financial instruments, insurance and others, all related to that. Something in our mind, while in sometimes we will recognize something into OCI or profit, is because whether reflect performance or not. So I still prefer OCI solution. And if everybody feel it not ready yet because we not finalize our conceptual framework project, so then I would rather prefer to delay as Steve proposed.
Towards the end of this discussion, at least one taker for your recommendation, Kazu.
But I don't think we'll swing the board for that. Do I feel a sense that it would be useful to bring back the ED or for a vote?
We should vote and see whether where it goes.
So the vote would be either on the staff proposal or the ED without any amendment to the as you propose.
Well, the staff proposal, I think, is for the OCI variant is soundly defeated, it seems to me.
Well, it depends what is the other proposal, what is the alternative view. I mean, it might not be the best one, but it might be an acceptable solution.
What about a straw poll for the 3 options in the paper plus the ED, to see you know, how many favor which one. That might give you a first sense.
Yeah, we can. So who goes for the P&L solution?
You want it.
How many?
Six.
Six.
And the OCI solution?
I could accept as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you can vote to
two, three.
And bringing back the ED.
The scope exception. The scope exception for the not dealing with the transactions on shares.
Yeah, we can talk. We can see which one gets the most vote. Yeah.
There was nine. That did it.
11.
So, let's bring it back at the next meeting.
You lose one though. So you got to vote for me.
11 board members saying that they support the ED, then are we able to take a vote on that?
Yeah.
Proceed on that basis.
Yep.
I thought we were voting to bring it back for discussion next week.
Yeah, bring it back.
Not again. That's different.
We've discussed it 10 times now.
I think if you're finalizing ED, I respectfully submit to Gary that there is nothing to discuss. You put it in the equity, you wait for the underlying transaction to happen, then flush it to income statement.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, it will come back for redeliberations anyway. So
no, because we've all got action exposure. So this would be final.
Okay. We need to discuss.
Do we need to have a final discussion?
I think so.
Yes.
Let's do that.
I think okay.
Just be sure.
Okay.
What does it mean? So your next meeting, you're going to bring it to one final time to discuss it, or?
Yes, we'll bring it to the next board meeting with a paper that will just sort of go through the analysis as to this is the consequence. Because what I think I heard today was some concern about consequences of the different methods. So let's just make sure that we understand what the consequences are, and then you'll be able to vote in that full knowledge.
And then your board votes.
Thank you. Please continue my legacy.
I don't know whether I should sort of open up more, but there are, if we're going to go to equity, there are other things that perhaps we should consider, because the original proposal by the Interpretations Committee dealing with deemed acquisitions, deemed disposals separately, and then ignoring share-based payments. I mean, you could combine that with equity for the share-based payments. So there are other combinations that aren't in this paper and we haven't just considered. So if we're opening up the possibility of equity, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's equity for everything. I'm not saying that I would support an alternative. I'm just concerned that we consider the whole thing and don't just jump.
The right answer is not to lump everything into equity, but remember, this is something we promised that we will take care of it in the full equity method accounting. There is another side. This is only a problem of credit side.
That's why I would support the ED. But I just, if we're going to bring it back, then we need to demonstrate that we have considered everything.
Yes. So I totally agree with Stephen's idea, but. One more thing to add is committee's proposal plus B1, not just equity and OCI. P&L might be there. Another maybe idea of integrating all these issues, but a little complex than V1, more complex than V1, but there, as Gary or somebody else, as you suggested, maybe we might integrate these views, V1 and V3, because the deemed disposal and the deemed acquisition concept might be a quite reasonable good idea that's developed by the interpretation committee. If we stick to them, maybe if you respect, I'm repeating, but that's a good idea. Another thing that I'd like to propose maybe to add is we need a more complete analysis. This is good, but we need to see maybe the return side. Based on PP&E and you are paying some salaries, you are getting some other benefits from them. So we are just focusing on the credit side, expense, and you know, some equity or some other. But if we see some more complete picture of a real world, then maybe we might have a good, better decision in this quite complex issue.
But isn't the conflict there that this is supposed to be narrow scope?
Yes.
We want to get an answer reasonably quickly. We start adding all these considerations and get new papers, we'll be here for another 6 months debating this. And, you know, we're not trying to solve the whole problem.
Right. And a short-term narrow scope solution should be simple. So while I agree with, to some extent, with Steve that we should show that we considered everything, I mean, we can do combinations and permutations of these things, but if we want a simple solution, then we should stick with the exposure draft.
Yeah. And we should be very clear that the board intends to take it as a larger project and take care of it. My only worry is that having raised this much, having debated so much for 18 months, the message out there is it's free for all if you don't do anything. That's my biggest worry.
Yeah,
I was just going to say, and my main concern about in terms of bringing something in the paper next time is just to make sure that there aren't any unintended consequences as a result of going with the ED proposal, the equity
exactly.
method.
Yeah. That's correct.
Okay. So noted. Thank you. Kazu, you will not be bothered with by this anymore because leaving. You're leaving us. You're going back to Fujitsu.
Yes.
Thank you very much for all that you have accomplished for us in the last time. How long were you with us?
Two more days.
Two years.
Two years.
Thank you very much for your efforts.